NDR Info. Nachtclub.
Am Mikrofon ist Paul Baskerville und nun das Marina Diamandis Interview, das ich kürzlich in Berlin geführt habe. Hier ist erstmal Musik von ihrem neuen Album Fruit. Hier ist Marina and the Diamonds mit Happy.
So I actually have a track called Happy to begin. It's like a great declaration of intent and really kind of it seems to kind of just you want to make it clear to people exactly where you are, mm-hmm. sort of artistically or emotionally. And it's quite a courageous thing to do that because people might think, well, you know, what is she thinking? You know, this, she's, you know, nobody's happy really. Is she just pretending or is she really happy or is she happier than she used to be? Or,
yeah. You know. I mean, well, the lyrics aren't particularly happy. It's not really about a song. It's not really a song about feeling constantly happy. It's more saying that I've found a way in which I can experience happiness. But yeah, it felt right as an opener, even sonically, because it starts so small and stripped back. It's almost like I'm singing in your room. That's how I want listeners to feel, like, you know, like they personally relate to me. But it's not this kind of big, like, shiny process production. Even though I am a fan of that, I just didn't feel like it was right for this record.
Beim Stück Happy auf dem Album will sie uns nicht sagen, dass sie immer glücklich ist, aber sie hat einen Weg gefunden, um sich glücklich zu fühlen. Es ist ein sehr geeignetes Eröffnungsstück, meint Marina. Der Sound ist so intim arrangiert, es ist, als ob sie bei uns im Wohnzimmer sitzt. Sie möchte mit dem Song eine Nähe vermitteln, damit wir uns mit ihr identifizieren können. Sie wollte keine Hochglanzproduktion für diese Platte haben.
Do you think that, in a sense, so because it's the third album, you kind of you got it figured out, and you actually feel more stable, maybe emotionally.
Definitely. I think it comes with the territory of, you know, being older. I'm 29 now, and I think just having confidence in myself. Whereas before, I don't know if I could say that, you know, musically I'm better, but I think. For example, on the first album, I really, you know, I loved doing what I did and I wanted to write music and make music, but it was more that I really needed that praise from people, like I needed their approval. Whereas now I'm like, I don't really care because I'm writing for myself. I'm writing for a reason and it's got nothing to do with commerce.
Right.
It's got to do with how I feel as a person, how I communicate my views, and if anyone is listening, then that's great. So, but, you know, regardless of doing this professional, I think I would always be doing this.
Marina sagt, ich bin inzwischen 29 und selbstbewusster geworden. Sie war zwar schon immer von ihrer eigenen Musik überzeugt, aber sie war auch sehr auf den Zuspruch anderer angewiesen. Inzwischen ist das nicht mehr so. Sie schreibt aus künstlerischen Gründen und ihre Musik sei nicht im geringsten kommerziell ausgerichtet. Die Songs sind ein Ausdruck ihrer Gefühlswelt.
Do you actually think that you get to a certain age where kind of the crass, stark commercial ambition actually gets less and you actually you become more settled down and you just find your own kind of niche where you feel comfortable in?
Not for everyone, I don't
Sorry,
think.
Can I take that off
Sorry,
you?
Yeah.
It's meant to be for radio. If you do that for half an hour, you know, it can give you quite irritating.
Yeah, absolutely. Not for everybody. Depends what kind of artist you are. Some artists accidentally fall into this and they experience major success very early on, and then that affects them in a negative way afterwards. Whereas for me, it was quite a slow climb, and I was, in fact, obsessed with being seen as this kind of ambitious person. But really, what I really wanted didn't really have anything to do with that. It was very much like a cover for expressing that I wanted my music to mean something to people.
Probably feel safe because you've reached a certain level of recognition where you've got a fan base you can rely on, haven't you, really, now?
I don't know. Because I don't... I know that I have a certain level of recognition, but I don't think it's huge. So I'm very kind of happy for where I'm at, but I don't know if that has anything to do with being relaxed or feeling a bit more at home with it.
Right.
I think it's a more personal thing.
And what led you to make the decision to actually write the whole album on your own? Because you have had co-writes in the past.
Because it's something that I'd really wanted to do since the start, and that I hadn't fully done because for example, on the first record, most of it was written alone, but I had like 3 or 4 co-writes because I was trying new things and I was just still very much learning about the industry. But secretly, deep down, I was like, I just want to write on my own. And then on this record, that was the time to do it. I'd just come from an experience which was very kind of constructive, but was creatively dampening, I would say.
You mean the last album? Right, okay. Creatively dampening, because you had too many co-writes, you think, there?
Yeah, and it wasn't even about, like, the actual songwriting itself. It was more about production and ironing out my voice, doing things like that. So with this one, it was an opportunity to actually make things in a very kind of pure way. And I really needed to do it. I was very, very thirsty to do that.
Yeah, because I thought on the Electro Heart album, I thought the songwriting was very strong, but I thought that the impact of your vocals was, as you said, dampened because they didn't actually come to their full effect.
For sure.
And was it something you only realised in hindsight, or were you aware of it at the time, and did you just take it on board?
Well, I was aware of it at the time, but it was a very complex album conceptually because I was basically trying to do, like, a subversive pop album whilst telling people that I was being subversive. So it's like, hey, I'm pretending to be, this, you know, empty bimbo pop star, but it's a joke, by the way. So.
And then you actually found that people really did believe you were empty.
Well, some people, because, America's a very big place, so I might be going to some radio stations and they didn't know anything about it or what I'd been before. So it was kind of an experiment for me. But, I'd never change anything because it informed my songwriting hugely and I definitely wouldn't have created Fruit.
So it's a good, good learning process.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when Electro Heart, when the kind of dust had settled on the album, I got the impression that people perceived you as being some sort of a mixture of Katy Perry and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah, it's kind of so weird.
But, which is quite a healthy mixture, let's face it.
Super healthy.
Mein Aufstieg ist eher langsam gewesen, sagt Marina. Ich habe in der Vergangenheit ein ehrgeiziges Image gepflegt. Das war eine Art Tarnung. Dahinter steckte bloß der Wunsch, dass meine Musik den Menschen was bedeuten sollte. Marina sagt, sie hat zwar inzwischen einen gewissen Grad an Anerkennung bekommen, aber so riesengroß ist ihr Status auch wieder nicht. Das Album besteht ausschließlich aus ihren eigenen Kompositionen. Sie hat früher öfter Co-Autoren gehabt, aber es war immer ihr Wunsch, ganz alleine zu schreiben. Beim letzten Album Electro Heart war die Arbeit mit Co-Autoren sehr lehrreich, hatte aber im kreativen Sinne eher einen negativen Effekt gehabt. Die Produktion von Electro Heart gefiel ihr nicht so richtig. Ihr Gesang wurde zu sehr glatt gebügelt. Bei der neuen Platte Fruit wollte sie unbedingt eine ganz reine Herangehensweise anstreben. Electro Heart sollte eine subversive Popplatte sein. Dabei musste sie den Leuten extra erklären, dass das Album subversiv war. Ich tat so, als ob ich ein dummer Tussi-Popstar sei, meint Marina. Aber ich wollte auch klar machen, es sei nur ein Scherz. In Amerika war ich bei Radiosendern, wo sie das alles nicht verstanden haben. And here's its starring role from the album Electro Heart from Marina and the Diamonds.
I mean, it's evident to me after 3 albums now that I don't want to flatter you unduly, but you are strikingly original. Because when I get sent like about 30 albums a week, and so much of it sounds similar to other things, you know, and I think that in your case, by comparison, that you're certainly pretty original. Are you actually aware of that sense of originality? Is it something you've actually tried to, in some way, build on, or is it just pure nature?
Thank you. That is very nice to hear. I think, actually, it's something that I felt was a hindrance in the beginning. So it's almost like the Family Jewels was very kooky. It had its moments where it was very palatable, like I'm Not a Robot, Hollywood, and then there were moments like Kermit the Frog, which were, like, very eccentric, or Mowgli's Road, which were more alternative or left field. And as an artist, you know, you obviously can pick up on what critics say, and my impression in the UK was that I was a bit too weird. And so I think with Electro Heart, it was almost like ironing that out a bit. So with this one, it is a relief to be able to just be whatever I am, and it's very satisfying. But that's very nice to hear. Thank you. I don't set out to do it, though, no.
Right, OK.
I just write what I want.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a bit strange thing to say, really. You remind me of a football team, in a way.
Oh, my God, I'm going to quit. quote that for Twitter today. Sorry.
No, let me explain.
That's brilliant.
No,
it's like I've had a checkered past. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I think what it is, I think that there are certain artists, and maybe it's artists particularly original, where if somebody's converted to their music, you know, it's like a conversion, almost like a religious conversion, and they actually, it's their artist. And then the people, they stick with you through thick and thin, and they take the rough with the smooth. So if they don't actually like an album all that much, or they dislike, like, almost all of it, they don't really care. Well, they do care, but...
Yeah, I mean, they're invested in you as a person.
Yeah, and it's the same with a football team. Nobody, you know, I've been a Manchester United fan since I was about 7, right? And I disagree with lots about Manchester United and lots of the tactics and stuff like that, and, you know, their politics. But you can't change your team. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't become a Berlin fan or a Hamburg fan, you know what I mean? It's just not possible. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do completely. I do.
So it's a bit strange to compare to a football team.
No, I think that's amazing. It's very true, though. Because I feel the same as a music fan. It's like, I don't know, like, for example, with Fiona Apple, like, the last album that she released, I didn't love, but I still bought it because I feel so closely connected with her as an artist, a personality. So I can completely understand that.
Right.
So any fans who have stuck with me, now is your time to shine, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Am Anfang empfand Marina es eher als ein Hindernis, dass sie so originell sei. Das Debütalbum The Family Jewels war recht skurril, sagt Marina. Klar, es gab leicht verdauliche Songs wie I'm Not a Robot und Hollywood, aber Kermit the Frog und Mowgli's Road waren richtig exzentrisch. Das Album war ein bisschen schräg. Elektra hat eine Art Gegenreaktion. Nun ist es eine Erleichterung, einfach so zu sein, wie ich wirklich bin, sagt Marina. Ich verglich dann die Loyalität von Marina-Fans mit Fußballfans. Egal, was Marina macht, bleiben sie ihr treu. Und Marina hat mir recht gegeben. So ging es ihr auch bei Fiona Apple. Sie mochte das letzte Album nicht so sehr, aber sie kaufte es trotzdem, weil sie sich so sehr geistig verwandt mit ihr fühlt.
Because you've always been a fan of Brody Dalle, because I remember the first time
yes.
I interviewed you, we played a Distillers track on the show.
And I'm still a big fan.
And I actually had her as a studio guest recently, it was a few months ago. And I mentioned you, because I mentioned the fact that you told me about Brody Dalle and Distillers. And then she said she'd actually got a tweet from you.
Yeah, she did.
That's right, but you didn't actually meet her.
I know.
And she didn't know anything about you, and so she just Googled you. But she only saw that YouTube video where you were standing in a shower with lots of naked men or something. And she thought, oh, cool. I don't really see the comparison to the Distillers, but fine, you know, it sounds great. You know.
I know. I wish she had heard, like, I don't know, a song like Robot or something that was a bit.
We have to tweet her again and tell her to. Yeah, well, maybe she has Googled you again since then. I don't know.
I know, but yeah, we did reach out to each other on Twitter. She was lovely.
Right.
Okay. She got me tickets for a show.
All right. Or maybe she'll do a collaboration with her someday.
I know. Well, have you heard The Savages on the album?
Yes.
I feel like she'd sound awesome on that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's one of my favourite songs on the album,
is
actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
I feel like her voice would sound just, like, crazy amazing on the chorus. So the thing is, though, I'll reach out to her and she'll probably think, what is she going to, like, send me? Probably expecting some Dr. Luke.
Yeah, exactly.
Pumping dance track.
She thinks she's doing a collaboration with Britney. Now, it's interesting, we're talking about having fans and so forth, and I think what's always impressed me with you is that you seem to have this close relationship to your fans. I remember when I first met you, and then I think I told you that I thought it was a bit futile what you were trying to do to actually reach out to the fans and keep some kind of personal contact with them going, because when you get to a certain level, it's not realistic, there's a hierarchy, and you can't really have a normal conversation with the fans.
No.
I think you've actually managed to pull it off, amazingly. That's the impression I get, and I don't know how you've managed to do it.
I don't know either, because in theory, I knew what you were saying, especially at that time, because I was actually doing, like, a tailor-made relationship between me and fans, you know, giving people, sorting people out for gig tickets and all this kind of crap, which I didn't have time to do, and it was running me dry, to be honest. So when you're... you can't be emotionally invested in specific fans, but you can find ways in which you can communicate with them in an authentic and genuine way, because the worst thing is doing en masse kind of, I don't know, thank you tweets and saying, like, I love you all the time. Like, sometimes you do feel that. Like, I actually said thank you to some people today, but you just don't want it to have that, like, nonsense kind of frivolous... exchange, because I don't feel that way. So you have to kind of I suppose you just have to communicate in a way that's honest for you. And somehow it has lasted. I think it's more to do with what I'm making, though, that they feel connected to. I don't know if it's purely based on the communication.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, all the other stuff that goes around it. For example, with Electra Heart, I had this Tumblr called The Archetypes, which I uploaded images onto. So it feels, in a way, it was like what I've been doing so far. It has this pop appeal, but it's got a DIY touch to it in terms of they know that I'm actually doing it. Like, I'm not some, like, unattainable global star where, you know, it's a huge machine. It's more like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. It's you know, a fair size. It's, like, it's significant. But at least they know that they're getting it from a real person. And I think that's the connection, that you know I'm a real person.
Right. And you're just not aloof, are you? You just have something down-to-earth about you. I think that's what it amounts to.
Well, I wouldn't know any other way to be. I don't think, yeah... That's just who I am.
Marina war immer ein großer Brody Dahl-Fan. Als Brody mein Studiogast war, haben wir über Marina geredet. Brody Dahl hat nur ein Video von Marina gesehen, in dem sie mit Männern in der Dusche steht. Marina findet es bedauerlich, dass Brody ausgerechnet den Clip gesehen hat. Marina sagt, ich habe tatsächlich früher versucht, einen sehr engen Kontakt zu den Fans zu pflegen. Auf Dauer konnte ich das aber nicht. Sie meint, dass man zwar keine richtige persönliche Beziehung zu den Fans führen kann, aber man kann mit ihnen auf authentische Weise kommunizieren. Ich habe zwar einen Pop-Appeal, aber habe auch eine gewisse Indie-Attitüde. Die Fans wissen, ich bin kein unerreichbarer globaler Star. Sie empfinden mich als eine echte Person.
And I thought that you could get removed from that someone when you reach a certain level of status, because you don't lead such a normal life as other people, possibly. So, but I mean, do you actually feel that you live a normal enough life?
I do, actually.
I mean, also in terms of getting artistic inspiration, you're going to really get real artistic inspiration by going through normal, real experiences, mm-hmm. rather than just sitting in rooms like this all the time, you know?
Mm. Well, I mean, it depends, because, say, if you were, absolutely massive and you had a really weird life, then it's only the emotions that you need that are universal to write songs. It's not so much the actual data experiences. But I like living quite a calm life. That's kind of my personality. And actually, the other day I did this fan Q&A called Fack in Hell that I've created on my channel. And
what, a rude channel or what?
No, well, on my YouTube channel.
Sounds a bit rude. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. And one of the questions was from someone in Brazil, and they said, do you like not being so famous? And and I said, I do, because I... it's nice when you go out sometimes and I'm made up and I go to Topshop or something and some teen girls come up to me. But I also like not having to do that and being able to go to Sainsbury's and buy some toilet roll. So I think it would actually drive me mad to have my life under scrutiny. So I feel...
there might be some people...
I feel like I want this kind of life.
Yeah.
Which in the beginning, because you think, success and fame are associated with not having that kind of life. So maybe that's what I should have, but taste-wise, desire-wise, that's actually the kind of life I enjoy.
Right, okay.
Wenn man ein ganz großer Star ist, führt man ein schräges Leben. Aber ich erlebe normale Dinge. Dann ist es ohne weiteres möglich, den Stoff zu bekommen, den man braucht, um Songs zu schreiben. Ich führe ein ziemlich ruhiges Leben. Bei einer Live-YouTube-Übertragung für die Fans fragte mich ein brasilianischer Fan, gefällt es dir nicht, so berühmt zu sein? Die Antwort ist ja. Es passiert schon mal, dass ich von Teenager-Mädchen erkannt werde, vor allem, wenn ich geschminkt bin. Aber ich mag es auch ganz gerne in Ruhe im Supermarkt Klopapier zu kaufen. Ich möchte nicht immer beobachtet werden. Und hier ist I'm a Ruin von dem Album Fruit von Marina and the Diamonds.
Was there a sense of apprehension for you when you started on this set of songs? Or do you never have such a thing as writer's block?
No, I've never had it. And I think that's down to the fact that I don't write unless I have something to say or I want to. So it's, I never think I must write the next single or something. It's more just I see something that inspires me and I might write it down, and then a month later I might go back to that and write a song. So
do you actually have the classic scenario of actually being particularly inspired when you feel a bit depressed, or does that not apply to you necessarily?
Yeah, but when you're actually really sad you can't write, or I feel you can't, it's kind of, it's almost the way that I write functions with the way that I am as a person, in that if I have a problem, I won't speak to someone about it. I'll only speak to them after the fact, i.e. when it's been solved.
Right,
so,
okay.
Same with songwriting. When I've decided how I feel about something, that's when I will write about it.
And is everything you write about on this album purely autobiographical?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so we can actually... We can really get quite a good idea of what you've been going through over the last couple of years.
I suppose so.
You can really get into details.
Yes.
So I think that's a case in point, maybe. It's something like Blue or something. So we know you kind of... You can't split up with somebody properly and things like that.
Yeah.
We know all about how you can't
split
up with
people. All right, fine.
We know all the details now.
Oh, God. You're funny.
But I think it's interesting because, I mean, some of the stuff you write is a bit miserable, like Immortal, for example. I mean, it's a lovely song, you know, but, I mean, obviously it's... People don't really like thinking about mortality, do they, obviously?
No.
But I think that when you... come over as a bit miserable, you do so paradoxically in quite an uplifting kind of way.
Yeah, that's what people say.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few fan comments on that. Or writing happy lyrics about sad things and vice versa. There's always a big contrast. But yeah, that's very true. It's very true.
And the sense of mortality or the hope of immortality, I mean, is that something which has become... Just as you get a bit older, you think about that more?
Mm.
No particular reason for that? You haven't...
Yeah, I mean, for some reason, I haven't really... doesn't really bug me at the moment. Maybe because I just wrote the song and then that kind of feeling was gone. But I think it was more stemmed from, like, a desperate feeling of... how do I, like, make this last? And, you know, questioning why you're here and what's important to you. You know, determining that it's... the kind of barometers that we have of happiness and success are mainly, like, from what I see, materialistic or, like, status-driven. Whereas really, it's... You know, when you die, you're leaving all of that behind. So it's like the only thing that you as a human can own or have are memories, creating memories. And I was inspired because I was in Poland and I went to a war memorial. And before I went on a tourist website to see, you know, if I should go or not. And one of the comments said, it's not a very pretty memorial, but it's worth going to honour the memories of those who died. And it just really stayed with me. That comment really, really stayed with me. And, you know, it's just like, you know, how we remember people who have passed away. It's like that's how you're kept alive, by memories.
That's right.
Yeah.
Could you say something about love never dying?
Yeah, absolutely. That, for me, is like that's what life is about.
Well, it sounds a bit like you become a Buddhist or something, really.
Not really. I haven't studied any religion. So.
Well, no, the idea of kind of like people's essence continuing when they die. It's like they're not actually, you know, the energy doesn't actually die, it just carries on in some way.
But, well, you'd like to think there's something, but who knows what.
Yeah. Mm. So, but you don't really need... religion, because you're kind of, you manage to exercise all your ghosts, you know, through your music.
I don't know. I wasn't brought up in a particularly religious background, even though I'm Greek, so it's, you know.
And even though you're Welsh.
And even though I'm Welsh.
Yeah, you could have been a Presbyterian, couldn't you?
I could have been. So, yeah, it's not really, I don't know. So, yeah, it's not something that's in my everyday life, but it's something that I think about. There must be something, even if that's like just an energy force, like a universal energy that ties us all together.
Right.
But yeah, there's no kind of system there for me.
Sowas wie eine Schreibblockade kenne ich nicht. Vielleicht, weil ich immer warte, bis ich wirklich eine Idee habe. Wenn ich wirklich traurig bin, kann ich eigentlich gar nicht schreiben. Ich teile meine Probleme mit anderen Menschen nicht. Ich erzähle erst davon, wenn ich das Problem gelöst habe. Ich schreibe auch Songs erst, wenn es mit der Krise vorbei ist. Viele Fans haben mir gesagt, dass ich traurige Texte schreibe, die dennoch irgendwie erbaulich sind. Das Lied Immortal klingt erstmal deprimierend. Das Thema Sterblichkeit beschäftigt mich momentan nicht so sehr. Vielleicht, weil ich das Thema durch das Lied schon verarbeitet habe. Aber klar, ich habe mir Gedanken über den Sinn des Lebens gemacht. Ein Kriegsdenkmal in Polen hat das Lied inspiriert. Wenn jemand stirbt, hat man nur noch Erinnerungen. Ich hatte keine religiöse Erziehung. And it's Immortal von Marina and the Diamonds.
I mean, you seem to be kind of always very comfortable with yourself and what you do, but, I mean, are there kind of times of self-doubt, which we don't find out about?
In terms of songwriting, or...?
Yeah, basically. Well, in terms of just being an artist, I mean, what you're doing is kind of... Obviously, you're a full-blooded artist. You know, you're thinking in terms of longevity. I mean, you say you've never had writer's block. You mentioned that before. So are you just...
It's weird, because actually, no, that's... I think maybe that's the one thing in my life that I actually feel confident about and that I feel I can project myself out from. Whereas the stuff that maybe I don't feel confident about is personal stuff, you know... It's stuff that we all deal with, you know. Does that person like me? You know, what's my, like, do I value myself? Things related with self-esteem, which are much harder to grapple with. But, you know, maybe, I guess that's probably a source for creativity as well and songwriting. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I would never say that I doubt myself. I'm sure I'm insecure about some things, but I've never thought... Am I good enough, or, like, should I be doing this? Right. I've just thought, this is really natural to me and it's what I love to do.
But has it made, like, a normal private life more difficult, do you think, going down this route? Not actually being able to meet people in a normal way, for example.
Well, I only actually experienced that this past 6 months, actually.
I suppose you might meet somebody at Sainsbury's, I suppose. I think.
Well, no, because I did meet a few... normal people, as in people who weren't in the industry, because most of the people I have dated have been in some part of the industry, because it's just who you associate with.
Like your radio promoter.
Yeah, like my radio promoter. I found it quite weird, actually, because I knew that they felt freaked out by the... because they have a perception of who you probably are, and it's quite far from who you actually are. So... it's a bit weird, but generally speaking, it's okay. Right. I'm not like someone who's like, woo, going to big events and parties all the time. So, generally speaking, it's been okay.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's strange because I think what you've managed to maintain after three albums is a kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a childlike innocence. There's something kind of incorruptible about you in some way. I don't know, that's the impression I get.
Well, that is so nice for you to say.
Oh, it's not, I can't prove that. It's just the impression I get. It's kind of like...
What, personality-wise?
Yeah, personality-wise and just music-wise. It's kind of like, you know, the whole ethic of indie music was meant to be, it's meant to be incorruptible, you know what I mean? But you've always been a major label, so that doesn't really apply. But there's something very indie about you, no matter how poppy you are.
Yeah.
It's still, even like Bubblegum Bitch, something like that, you know, yeah. It's tongue-in-cheek, and it's still indie in some way, in the sense of, in that incorruptible sense.
Yeah, that's...
Where that comes from, I don't know, because, I mean, you've had enough chance to... be corrupted.
It's true. I think everyone just expects you to be. And I think that's been the most difficult thing of my career, actually, is amongst a few other things, I think people just expecting you to be something that you're absolutely not, or people reading you incorrectly. And actually, Can't Pin Me Down on the record is definitely about that.
Which one, sorry?
Can't Pin Me Down.
Can't Pin Me Down, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of about... being sick of being defined and people thinking that they know who you are and you just feeling so frustrated and disappointed because they haven't got that right yet, or you haven't been able to express a certain part of yourself yet. So for me, Fruit, I think, will help clear a few things up.
Right. And of course, it's almost a bit childlike to actually call it Fruit with the wrong spelling.
Well, that's why I liked it.
Yeah, because my daughter noticed really that it was written wrongly.
Yeah.
And she said, well, can't she even spell properly? I said, well, no, I think it's probably deliberate. Because she's very proud of the fact that she's bilingual, you know.
That's so super cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because I got it sent as a watermark, you know, on the computer. Yeah. She's like, Fruit, you don't spell like that. You know?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. That's so cute. Yeah. No, I thought I just like the spelling, and it just looked playful.
That's what I'm saying about playful. That's another thing, important characteristic of what you do.
Yeah.
It's often been playful in the past. It's a bit more serious, this album, I think, than the other ones, but there's still a playful element to your character, I think, definitely, whatever you do.
Yeah. I think that's part of who I am. Humour is a big part of us all, so that's kind of part of my identity.
And also, I get the impression that... The way you convey things in songs, and also it's true in this album as well, there's a kind of self-deprecation about it sometimes. It's almost self-effacing in a way. You don't look at yourself... you don't come over as arrogant at any stage. If anything, you seem to be almost... making ironic cracks about yourself, in a way.
No, it's very true, particularly on Electra Heart.
Yeah. Which was kind of like, okay. Which was... Yeah, I suppose Electra Heart was a bit like your Ziggy Stardust, I suppose, wasn't it?
Probably.
And this is more like your Hunky Dory, then, is it?
I don't know.
Was before Ziggy Stardust, so the other way around.
I don't have Hunky Dory.
I think that's the best album. Actually.
Really?
Yeah. Ich bin, was meine künstlerische Kompetenz betrifft, total selbstbewusst. In meinem Privatleben bin ich weniger selbstsicher. Es geht um Themen wie Selbstwertgefühl und mag er mich wirklich? Das ist auch eine Quelle der Kreativität. Ich habe aber nie gedacht, dass ich als Künstlerin nicht genüge. Es ist schwierig, wenn ich Dates mit Männern gehabt habe, weil sie es seltsam finden, mit einer Frau verabredet zu sein, die bekannt ist. Don't Pin Me Down ist ein Stück, das davon handelt, wie die Leute es nicht schaffen, mich richtig einzuordnen. Das neue Album wird vielleicht irgendwie diesbezüglich Klarheit schaffen. Fruit wird falsch buchstabiert, absichtlich. Es soll was Kindliches haben. Verspieltheit und Humor waren mir immer wichtig. Hier ist jetzt das besagte Stück, Don't Pin Me Down. It's interesting though, because, I mean, people like Bowie have been around for a long time and they've made some good records when they've been quite old, but people still tend to think back to like the 1970s as being, you know, their heyday. And I saw a documentary recently about the making of Quadrophenia about The Who, and Pete Townsend said he's about almost 70 now. And he said, looking back, that Quadrophenia was the last truly great Who album. And he was 28 when he wrote it. He's like 70 now, you know. And so that's a very honest statement to make, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a certain amount of truth in that an artist has her day, has his day?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, are you prepared to put up with that, that maybe like in 20 years' time people are going to say, well, you know, this album was the best Marina album?
Absolutely. I think it's natural to accept that. And I think also that, you know, your 20s are when you feel most passionate about things in terms of figuring things out. You know, not passionate, but like the intense emotions. Because you're new in the world. You're like looking at things very wide-eyed. So you're never going to, you know... You're never going to maintain that kind of energy, is what I'm saying. All you can hope for is that you will be inspired. But, you know, really, I don't know. Maybe after this one, I won't have anything to say. Honestly, I feel like so kind of calm and content at the moment that I don't really know what the future holds. Maybe
I'll... Can't be the last album.
Maybe I will do something else, you know?
Yeah.
I can really take it or leave it at this stage.
Yeah.
You know, okay. The world is so big and life is so expansive that maybe I don't want to, you know, tour for the rest of my life. I don't think I put it at high enough value to like commit my whole life to this, because I want to do other things, you know,
right,
that are human, you know, have relationship or kids, you know, things that are really important. So who knows? I'm sure it won't be the last album, but But yeah, I'm sure I will never create another one like this. I know it's a special album.
I think what's special about it is the fact that it's the most appealing in a kind of modest way. It's not as maybe flamboyant as what you've done so far.
Yeah, it's more of a subtle... Like,
yeah.
Not a slow burner, but like it's not screaming to be heard, really.
Well, it might turn out to be a slow burner, I don't know. I mean, I did actually listen to it a few times to properly understood it, I think.
Mm.
You know, whereas, like, with the first album, the second album, there were certain songs which were had immediate impacts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this had less of an immediate impact, which is often, like, in the long term, a good thing.
Yeah.
I remember one thing you said to me last time was that people could interpret it as being a bit pretentious, but you were being very genuine about it when you said that you feel in some way what you're doing as an artist is for the greater good, in the sense that it has a positive, wholesome effect. And is that still the case to you? I mean, do you actually feel this almost like a sense of a mission about what you do?
No, not consciously at all. What was I on about?
I don't know. Maybe you were just being a bit...
flamboyant.
Yeah, because it was...
confident that day. I don't know. Yeah, definitely not consciously.
Right, OK. So... So you're happier than you've ever been, and you're more at peace with the world than you've ever been then?
Yeah, I don't know if I... I mean, I am happy, but I would say more content. More just, like, happy in who I am. I feel more confident. Definitely a lot more stable than I used to be. I used to be all over the shop. So that's nice, not having to deal with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for talking to me again.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Es ist nur natürlich, dass ein Künstler seine Blütezeit hat. Wenn man in seinen Zwanzigern ist, ist man extrem leidenschaftlich. Vielleicht habe ich nach diesem Abend nichts mehr zu sagen. Ich fühle mich momentan so ruhig und zufrieden. Ich möchte nicht unbedingt für den Rest meines Lebens auf Tour gehen. Ich möchte Kinder kriegen. Naja, Fruit wird schon nicht das letzte Album sein, aber dieses Album ist was Besonderes. Es ist subtil. Ich bin schon glücklich. Zufrieden ist ein besseres Wort dafür. Ich fühle mich wohl. Ich war sonst sehr unausgeglichen. Ich fühle mich stabiler. Das ist schon mal gut. Hier ist jetzt Savages von Marina and the Diamonds von dem Album Fruit und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info Nachrichten.